the idea of paradox, the idea that two ideas that are seemingly at odds with each other can live in the same space. In other words, you and I don't agree, but we are both right. Is that a possibility? Paradox. I know that many people will understand that as some sort of cognitive dissonance. I think paradox, wrongly applied, becomes cognitive dissonance. But paradox is perhaps the epistemological humility that we need. Was that the term that the professor gave us the other day? Epistemological humility. The ability to free oneself off the burden of certainty. No, it's not mine. That thing is like, wow, that's deep. It's not mine. Remember we had the guest a few weeks ago who taught us about that. Epistemological humility. I've had people tell me about average minds discuss people. Yeah? And good minds discuss events. But brilliant minds, I'm told, discuss ideas. And for that reason, I want to thank those of you who participated in the conversation, many of you still continuing with that participation. I want to read you a message coming from Marianne in Fairy Glen. She says, I could not appreciate the biblical injunction to be humble until I realized that not knowing opens one to deeper knowledge. And that is from Mary in Fairy Glen. I couldn't agree with you more, Mary. And I suppose we are being called upon, particularly in this country, with the many challenges that we face, perhaps to unburden ourselves just for a while of our certainty about certain things and humble ourselves to the possibility that maybe there are different viewpoints and that my adversary is correct from his or her viewpoint, inasmuch as I am correct from mine or my viewpoint. And that the challenge is, how do we find each other for the purpose of finding the solution to the problem? Because we're all very good at pointing out the problem from our vantage point, isn't it? But the problem persists. Amongst the people that were listening to that conversation, folks, is a man that I was looking at while I was having that conversation on television as he was facilitating a conversation in Soweto on his show, Truth to Power. His name is Dr. J.J., Professor Dr. J.J. Taban, and he joins me on the line. Hey, bro, J.J.?
Hola, bro. How are you?
All right, my bro. Isn't it crazy? It's surreal, man. I was looking at you. I was having the conversation with Michael Lee. I'm looking at you on ENCAS. Of course, I look at different TV shows while all of you guys are talking about different things. And here you are now. I'm talking about you. You were listening to the conversation?
Absolutely, yes. I was listening to it driving home.
Wow.
I was excited because actually, in that conversation we're having, it was a paradox that you're talking about. Because we're talking about an intergenerational dialogue on the future of South Africa. Now, if you want a paradox, there cannot be a better one, because you can imagine the polarized views from somebody from the DA on one side and another from the ANC, another from AZAPO, another from Operation Dudula. All of them disagreeing, but actually agreeing. It's a question of the extent to which we agree on something.
Yeah.
For example, can you really say nothing happened in the last 30 years? You can't say so.
Yeah.
Because all you need to do is to go and stand at Allendale. You know the road called Allendale?
Yes.
You know, if you're on Allendale 25 years ago, you take you an hour to just pass Allendale because the road was so bad.
Yeah.
The infrastructure is different. I'm just giving you an example of before and after.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you could say, but we expect that better. We could have done better.
Yeah.
How can we have 45% unemployment rate? you know, after 30 years of being in power. So there is your paradox that, you know, others will be on the extreme that says nothing happened. Others will be on the extreme that says, no, a lot happened.
Yeah.
But we are all saying a lot can still happen. So in other words, we're in agreement that this is not the end of the road. So I thought this was surreal listening to your conversation to say I've just been from one such paradox about the future of this country.
I was watching the conversation, but I couldn't hear what you were talking about, but I could see that there were some moments of heated conversations. I could see some veins popping out of people's foreheads as they made points. And I thought to myself, there is beautiful South Africa. People passionate about...
I mean, all you need for a heated debate is Puntax and a Minister of Home Affairs. You know, you'll need their own show to disagree about how to handle immigration. But we try to steer away from that debate too much today. It was more about, when we said intergenerational, I wanted to bring somebody like Motsoaledi, who's representing the older generation. But on the same panel, we had our young mayor, Mayor Mpopala, who's only 45.
Yes.
You know? Mbali Tsope, who's the MEC for Sports and Culture, only in her late 30s, you know. And then see whether we can find common ground. Baby Tawa, who is the Deputy Secretary of Parliament, he was actually in the march in the thick of things in 1976.
Yeah.
So I brought a sort of a bridge between the two generations.
Yeah.
And of course, Dr. Lux, Nelvin Kagema, very young president of AZAPU,
yes,
as well as Miss Mda, who's the daughter of Anele Mda, they are both fireworks. You can imagine that it was quite a heated conversation. I'm not sure, you know, whether or not there's anything tangible that you can say came out, but I think that there was a need to show that there's a need for more conversation. You know, Aubrey, if you call a town hall right now, and I can challenge you to do it, go to Madibe and call a town hall and give it a topic. Say, I want to talk about social cohesion. People all care about your topic.
Yeah.
People there were saying to the mayor, but we are coming after you, and we wrote to you, you want us to pay 6,000 to ESCOM. That was not the topic, but it found its way. Why? Because there seems to be less and less spaces where citizens can directly confront the politicians about what they want to see happen in their communities.
Yeah.
And so whether it's parliament that's calling a so-called public participation, whatever they call it, people will come there with what matters to them.
Yeah.
And if we can start there and make our politicians, whether be it ward councillors, whether be it mayors, and so on, to learn to face the people, we'll have a better country, and that's a good start for solving the problems of this country.
I'll tell you very quickly my approach and my opinion of the town hall. Very often, as you've already said, doesn't really yield anything except, I suppose, entertainment value and a spectacle, and I suppose some data for sociologists to say that this kind of conversation is taking place, and then for us who are in the media, suppose it gives us whatever gratification we need. I tend to be interested in the underlying ideas around a particular issue, and for that, and there are people that can do the town halls far better than I can, Brajeje.
Sure.
One of them is you. So I like to stick to my lane, and that lane is to ask questions about why. Why are we doing this? Why do I ask a particular question in a particular way? Does that reveal a certain prejudice in me? Does it reveal a particular unacknowledged bias or prejudice in me? Or is it really about trying to open up the space so that we can understand things a little bit better so that we are able to make better decisions? So for me, my approach to conversation is one that is wanting to understand the back office of what is happening in front. Why is this happening? Why is that person happening? So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, Brajeje, that are connected to your show tonight. Because I just from what I was seeing, I can see that there were a number of conversations taking place, layered conversations taking place, just from looking at the people and the interests that they all represent. You had Ntlanhla Lux there. Hey, Ombuds, why doesn't Ntlanhla Lux not want to talk to me? Can't they nagimi ditsi?
Oh, when I'll bring him.
Well, no, I want to talk to that young man. No, I've sent I don't know how many.
You'll be amazed when you talk to him. You know, the guy is as you said, with a layered conversation. He has various layers.
Yeah.
Don't just take him on the surface about Operation Dudu.
Sure.
I think he will make an excellent profile guest for your Friday shows. Yeah?
Sure. So I've invited him many, many times. And in fact, the evening he got arrested after leaving Kaya FM, he was coming here. So maybe he thinks I'm involved.
I'll whisper
in his ear. I want to talk to him because there are questions that I have about his approach, his ideology, his stance that I think haven't been asked. And I'm not going to ask them, otherwise, what would you say on your show? But here's the question.
Yeah.
You and I know that we are grappling with a number of issues at the moment. The Palafala Gate issue is a big issue at the moment. Not only that, but the why the Palafala issue arises now and the person that raises the Palafala issue at the moment and all of the issues that are out there. We are aware that the Hawks went to go and see Arthur Fraser today, and so clearly the investigation is now underway in earnest. Questions have been asked. And there's an investigation. So that is one issue that we're grappling with at the moment.
Yeah.
We're grappling, of course, with the issue of the economic crisis that we are facing at the moment, the rising prices as far as fuel is concerned, the issue of the unemployment. 66% of our youth are unemployed at the moment is a big issue that we are grappling with now. We are grappling with the issue of the ZEP. I see that the Helen Suzman Foundation has now jumped into the fray to oppose the scrapping of the ZEP story. I'm talking about the residents' permit that has been given to Zimbabwean nationals who've lived in this country for a long time. I've said to somebody on Twitter that I think it's going to be a humanitarian crisis. I think it's going to be a problem. Whether you agree with it or not, there is going to be a problem that looms out of that. I have even suggested that we've already got people that are documented via the ZEP. Perhaps the conversation and the effort should be about finding out who's undocumented. We know that the 180,000 or the 200,000 odd are documented. We know who they are and where they are because they're documented. The issue then becomes who is undocumented and then decide what we are going to be doing. I want to see a little more accountability for the ZANU-PF government in this crisis rather than it just being left to South Africans in South Africa to deal with. But those are some of the big issues that we're dealing with. We're dealing with global warming. We're dealing with the war in Ukraine or the conflict in Ukraine to decide whatever term you want to use. How do we start a conversation? You and I are interlocutors. We are facilitators of conversation in this country. Yeah. How do we do it in such a way that it becomes solutions oriented? That it becomes about creating a situation where people look for solutions rather than for opportunities to make a speech? How do we deal with the fact that we've dropped the bar so low that we are praising, and I think he deserves the praise, Gayton McKenzie with the good work that he's doing in Gayton McKenzie with the good work that he's doing in the Karoo, right? The bar, these are his words. He says the bar has been dropped so low in terms of service delivery that the minimum that a guy like me does is seen to be great, excellent work. How do we have a conversation in South Africa that says, but what are we going to do about the fact that there is this love of an organization that has been legitimately put into power by the majority of the people in this country, but has dismally disappointed us? And how do we unhinge those that continue to show its love to the detriment of all of us at the moment? Do you see the range of issues that we're dealing with? How do we handle those in a solutions-orientated way, Prof?
Yeah, I wish I had a full answer to that, but I'll give you one or two ideas. First of all, when I started in the media, and it was by pure accident, as you know, I found you there. I used to call you at this time and talk to you for long hours, you know, as a caller. Sure. But when I got on the other side, I felt that one of the things we need to deal away with is what I can call microwave journalism.
Yeah.
In other words, just come here, talk for 5 minutes and go. We're running out of time.
Yeah.
Quote unquote, right? And in that kind of scenario, you are not able to go to the depth of issues. You don't even talk about, oh, let's have solutions, because people like to make a long speech first, analyzing. And I like people to you know, I've got roughly an hour divided into four segments.
Yep.
Right now. I used to have 4 hours. So when I started with 4 hours, I decided I want people to come there to talk to me for an hour or an hour and a half.
Sure.
Anything else, the drive show can do that successfully.
Indeed.
Because you are all in a hurry to go to work or whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
I resonate with that, because that's exactly the format with my show.
Yeah.
4 hours. Let's talk.
You're on the right path.
Yeah.
I know you are saying this is a dilemma, but you are on the right path in that you are not in a rush to just interview somebody quickly and go.
Yeah.
You want to get to the bottom of it, and that's why you have the audience you have. I've had the kind of luminaries who are ringing you, but also just ordinary people who enjoy analysis and going right into the issue. Because conversation at the end of the day may be tiring, but that's how we're going to get solutions.
Yeah.
On my radio show, and I miss radio, I must tell you, but Ops, you need to invite me again there to co-host with you.
It's the first love, my brother. It's the first love.
You understand? What I liked about it was this solution orientation you're talking about, because we shouldn't look too far.
Yeah.
As they say, we are the leaders that we are waiting for.
Mm.
People used to call and say, I have this idea, I need an investor.
Mm.
I don't know what to do. And somebody calls and says, tell that person to call me. I tell you that on an average time, if I'm away for 2 weeks or whatever on my study leave in those days, I would come back to some 3,000 emails, bro. I'm not joking with you.
Yeah.
Actually, it was depressing to come back, because you're going to go through these emails and half the time you don't have solutions for what people are asking.
I know exactly what you're saying. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Others who called on your show and say, I can't find blacks. So that was a favorite one when I was in corporate.
Yeah.
You get people saying, I can't find blacks to hire in this position. I said, okay, I'll give you a number of black management forum. Have you ever heard of them? So those kind of linkages, right, don't leave the word to government. Because they were going to be disappointed. We all know that.
Yeah.
They are leaving the work to us as citizens to say, I've got an opportunity. On your show, somebody phoned in to say, I want to publish a book.
I remember.
And I called in and said, tell these people to email me.
Yeah.
You'll be shocked how much they needed to publish that book.
Mm.
It's something that you would not even know what you did with it if you were just a normal middle class person walking up and down.
Yeah.
But now those people are sitting with their book. That's probably selling. That's probably getting them out of trouble.
Yeah.
I'm just giving that as an example that says the issue about solution driven must not just be suggesting solutions to somebody else to do something, but also to challenge ourselves to do something amongst ourselves to brighten the corner where we are, so that when all of us do that in various places, and I gave an example recently on a podcast interview that caused all the trouble, where I was saying, that mustn't
was it the podcast or was it the native that caused all of the trouble,
Yeah, with DJs. I said, no, you know, I don't drink, but I understand that Johnny Walker Blue is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If I just gave up one weekend of drinking, I could send somebody to school for a whole year at UNISA.
Yeah.
Right? And I won't even remember whether I was drunk or not drunk or whatever.
Mm.
Right? So I'm saying that the solutions are within us as communities, as society. That does not mean you must excuse government. I'm just saying here, our platforms must be to connect people, to inspire people to work, to do something for themselves, and also to, at the same time, encourage them to hold those in power who are spending my money and yours
yeah.
accountable.
To walk the talk, as it were, yeah? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. I was saying to walk the talk, as it were.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I support your slogan.
Yeah.
But was all walk that talk.
Yeah.
Because talking on solve our problems,
yeah.
but we need to talk in order to find solutions together and make sure that people do not believe that all the solutions are going to come from government. I mean, you should just have been in this conversation.
Yeah.
Like I said, somebody just off-ramped and said, no, you know, 2,500 of us were fired last week by the MEC of Health after COVID. We're carrying COVID corpses, and now that that has passed, you are now dumping us. Now, you know, MEC stop it. You know, God bless them. She's not the MEC of Health, but she had to take on that and say, you are part of the executive.
Mm.
You can't say you don't know. You go and sort it out. Now, if there wasn't so insulated on that day, where was that person supposed to express that frustration? So I'm not saying that is not important. I'm just saying we got to do more than one thing at a time with this platform.
Yeah.
Secondly, as journalists, as media practitioners and so on, we need to understand the kind of power that we are given to facilitate these dialogues for a purpose. There must be dialogues with an outcome
yeah.
of some sort.
Yeah.
And I hear what you're frustrated about town halls. But they plant their seed somehow.
Yeah.
You know, my takeaway there to say, if you are Minister of Toilet Reform Affairs, you went away knowing that people are worried about something that you may not have thought of.
Yeah.
If you're a mayor of Johannesburg, you know how angry people of Soweto are about Eskom. Not that you didn't know before, but you saw it face to face.
Yeah.
And when you are sitting in your executive committee meetings, that's going to sink in. I believe that there's a little contribution we can make with
these platforms. Mm. But JJ, I know I stole your time. Just one more question, though. One more question. One of the philosophical issues I have sometimes with the very noble idea of walking the talk, as people who are interlocutors. In other words, the people that must provoke a conversation and still be the facilitators and arbiters of a conversation, is that when we begin to walk the talk, perhaps in a particular way, in a more practical way, some may read a political agenda into that. And that may taint the other work that you do. You and our mutual good friend Lukhona Mnguni. Or maybe I should leave it, eh?
No, don't leave it there.
All right.
I mean, that's an interesting question. I knew that one day you were going to ask me politely, as you always
are. As I'm doing now.
Let me answer it very quickly.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm not a journalist.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I have to explain this all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I was an accidental media practitioner.
Yeah.
I have a platform. I consider my platform, for example, at ENCA, as an opinion piece.
Yes.
Right? It's like, banning Tombo.
Sure.
But I'm talking to write for the Sunday Times. He's not a journalist.
Yeah.
He has a platform. He has a voice. He's been given a platform there, like Peter Bruce.
Yeah.
I don't know if Peter Bruce is a journalist or not, but I'm just giving. He says it's a column.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a news all day, and then at 8 o'clock, we stop to reflect on what has been happening in the day. I happen to be the facilitator of the conversation, but I'm not particularly concerned about not stating what my views are, because I'm not a journalist. That's not my job. I didn't choose that path in my studies because I don't have the kind of patience of sitting on the fence that journalists have to do
to
make sure that people feel all accommodated.
Indeed.
Right? On radio, it's better. It was better because people could call and challenge me. If I rant like I usually do, they'll say, no, you don't agree with that noise that you are making. On television, they can only, maybe do Twitter. There's not a lot of time. And I will look forward to a point where, we're going to open the lines even on television. We're working on it.
Yeah.
Right? But I just want to clarify that, first of all, I'm not a journalist. Therefore, I don't have the constraints of a journalist. You know, if Lukhona and I were journalists, we would have been fired by now.
Yeah.
We decided to write a letter to Parliament.
Yeah, but some of you have been fired, or am I?
I know. But we would have been fired for this kind of action.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where we write a letter to Parliament and say, but what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, this is a mix-up of party and state.
Yes.
This is a mix-up of separation of powers.
Yes.
Everything wrong about it. And the ANC caucus were going to vote like sheep.
Yeah.
So even if, that didn't end up in March, Right? They did something that, I tell you, it doesn't happen often.
Yeah.
They responded to us in 24 hours.
Yeah.
Usually, if you write a letter, and I can tell you to write a letter to the Speaker of Parliament now and see how long it will take for you to get a response. Or a minute.
No, I'm still waiting for my response from the President. I think it's two years ago.
Don't forget, his plate is full right now with the farm gate.
Yeah, so but let me tell you what happened. 2 years ago, I had a student here. From time to time, we have students that come and get some practical sort of work to come and watch how we do a show, how we put it together, and all of those kinds of things. I know you'll know about this. And I got that student to write a letter to the president. I think it was just before their the SONA of that year. What year was it again, Tati? I think it was 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. It was a media study student that was here. And the gist of that letter was, Mr. President, we believe that if all of you who work for government were to, by law, be forced to use government amenities, whether it's hospitals, schools, whatever, but government amenities, we would see a very quick turnaround in terms of service delivery.
Absolutely.
We wrote the letter, we read it on air, we sent it to the presidency. 2 years ago, this was at the height of President Cyril Ramaphosa's favor and everybody loving him. I mean, I understand right now he's probably not reading anything right now. This guy's got to deal with some issues. But 2 years ago, nobody responded to us. So what? Do I need to be JJ Tabani to get a response? What's the story here?
No, I'm sure your letter is in file 13. What is called file 13? They just said this guy is crazy. But actually, on the issue you are raising, why can't you write a letter to the Speaker of Parliament and say, I'm a citizen, and I would like to challenge any party in Parliament to do a private member's bill that would say that government ministers must go to private hospitals.
Public hospitals. Yeah.
Why can't you do that? That's where the walking the talk comes. Now, what political agenda is that, other than you being a citizen?
Yeah.
I think sometimes we stretch these things too far. Yeah. People are expecting that if you are a media practitioner or a journalist and so on, you must be in a bubble somewhere where you are neutral. You can't write to your counselor.
Yeah.
You can't write to your ward counselor and say, but my water is off. Why can't you do that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you can do that, then you can also write to the caucus of the ANC in Parliament and say, but you are making a wrong decision.
Absolutely.
This person is incompetent. She failed. 300 people died under her watch as a defense minister, and then you promote her and make her the third most powerful person in the country. That can't happen in my watch, and I'm silent. I want in the future for my kids to know I didn't keep quiet when such nonsense was happening. Right? So I know people may be confused about it, but I hope today they are terrified. I'm not a journalist. I'm an opinion maker, and what my job is to make opinion. It may rub people the wrong way. I'm sad right now that there isn't too much of a two-way street. In other words, it's too much of a showbiz in one way.
Yeah.
But we will improve it. But remember, that's not the only platform I have. I also edit two publications.
Yes.
Leadership Magazine, Black Business Quarterly, and I'll also now be lecturing in communication studies. So I'll have a range of platforms where I can have people push back, challenge me, so that I'm also sharper. I don't think that I'm speaking gospel truth all the time.
Dr. JJ Tabane, always great, my brother, to talk to you. And long may you continue to disrupt things that are happening in this country. Malume Trevaring.
Malume Trevaring, akoto, reisana koto, uto wamo standing, awelelema agamo standing zeo. Kemata kokoto, agumutuhela. We cannot have people bullied in this country.
Dr. JJ Tabane.